The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Owners of million-euro houses to pay less tax under property tax changes. Some renters to get protection from eviction, but thousands fear 8% rent hikes. And Dr. Tony Holohan doubles down on comments about outdoor socialising as row brews over fencing off public spaces. All that coming up after the news with Shane McGowan. Thanks, Shane. Good evening and welcome to Wednesday's Late Debate. Joining us tonight we have Barry Ward, Fine Gael Senator and Shannon Spokesperson on Justice, Claire Curran, Sinn Féin TD for Roscommon Galway and Spokesperson on Social Protection and Rural Development, Michael Healy-Ray, Independent TD for Kerry, and Gráinne Nié, journalist with thejournal.ie. We want to hear from you, so get in touch. You can text us on 51551. You can email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate_rte. So the details of that surprise change to the property tax regime were revealed today. And it turns out that the owners of those elegant red bricks in South County Dublin can breathe a sigh of relief because they will actually be paying less tax on their million euro homes under the new tax bans. Barry Ward, that must come as some relief to yourselves and your fellow canvassers out on the campaign trail in Dublin Bay South.
Well, first of all, the changes are not surprise changes. They've been coming for a long time. And secondly...
Well, some of your colleagues now expressed huge surprise that they emerged out of a cabinet meeting yesterday.
Well, the timing might be a surprise, but the changes are not. The changes had to come. We haven't had their houses built in 2013 that are not counted for property tax at all, which means that somebody who bought a new house in 2012 has been paying since, and somebody who bought a new house in 2013 hasn't. And there's a fundamental unfairness in that that had to be addressed. But I think it's important not to suggest that, you know, the bigger your house, the less you're going to pay. That's not at all. Property tax is progressive insofar as it reflects the value of the house. But what this change is a change in the bans, and it's a widening of the bans, which means that more people will pay property tax than we're paying beforehand. So if somebody was at the bottom of a higher band before and they now move into the top of a lower band, then yes, they will pay less. And in fact, 60% of householders, irrespective of what the value of their house is, will find that their property tax either won't change or will go down. Out of the 40% who see an increase, the increase is likely to be of the order of about 90 euro. So it's not going to represent very substantial changes, but what will happen will more people will come into the net. And that's exactly as it should be, because it's not fair that there were certain people who were outside the net and not being counted for property tax.
Claire Curran.
Yeah, well, look, I
think it wasn't fair and now it is fair.
Yeah, well, I think the whole property tax isn't fair, full stop. I think it's an unjust tax and it's on the family home and I don't think it should exist. You will know our party position in relation to that. And I think it's really unfortunate that the Taoiseach in the parliamentary party meeting, and of course we get the weekly leaks, he was very quick to allay fears for those people that are living in homes over a million euro that their local property tax will be reduced. Whereas then we have to consider the thousands of workers and families who have had an incredibly difficult 18 months. And they're not only facing now cuts in September in relation to the pandemic unemployment payment, whether or not the sector is open or not, but they are also facing increases in local property tax. And for a lot of people, they ask the question, what am I getting in return? And in rural areas, for the people I represent in Roscommon Galway, it's very little or nothing at all. And that's a big part of the problem.
Okay. Can I just put to you what the Taoiseach put to your party leader in the Dáil today? He accused Sinn Féin of political dishonesty on this. I think we have that clip now.
Just 1 hour's drive from this building in Northern Ireland, you run the Department of Finance. You're the largest party in 5 out of 11 local authorities. You have no problem whatsoever with an annual tax on the family house, calculated on the basis of its value. In fact, in 8 of the 11 council areas, that tax bill will increase for 2021 and 2022. If you own a house in Mid-Ulster, valued at 150,000, one has to pay 1,192 per year in property tax. And for 2021-22, the local council decided to freeze the rate. And the Sinn Féin councillor who was tasked with responding said that not raising the rate was like asking council officers to do their job with one hand tied behind their back.
Now, what's the difference between the fairness of taxing people's family homes 100 miles up the road
And doing it here.
Yeah, the difference is fairly stark because it is an entirely different system in the north. I spoke to my friend, she lives in Oma there this evening. She pays her rates every year. She gets her bins, she gets her water, they're all included. And what's really interesting as well, and what I really liked about the system in the north too, is they actually get a breakdown of what they're actually getting for the tax they pay. And part of that goes into Stormont, which, I mean, pays for the likes of education and health, which I've heard many references made to today. But it's very different in the north, Katie. I mean, you go to school, there are people down here when their children start primary school, they go to money lenders and they get credit union loans. In the north, education is free. You get your school transport. But if you're making comparisons between the north and south,
you get nothing for your property tax here.
But where is the money going in relation to the property tax?
It goes into roads, it goes into libraries, it goes into parks, it goes into public refuse collection, it goes into all the services provided by local.
Yes, it does.
It does. Who do you think collects the bins that are on the streets in Dunleary or Dublin City?
They're paid for privately.
The public bins that you put your rubbish into in the street are paid for by the council. And not only that, Claire, but I spent 11 years on Dunleary Down County Council. Every year that I was there, the council published a breakdown of exactly how much of your euro in tax was spent and where it was spent. So the breakdowns are there as well.
We never get a breakdown in relation to our tax. And while that's great in relation to parks and in relation to libraries, in rural areas, we have none of those services. We pay for our bin collection separately.
But where are you suggesting that the property tax in your constituency, for instance, where are you suggesting that is spent?
Well, we don't know where it's spent because we don't get the breakdown. But
do you accept that it's spent on public services
But a lot of people would say what
local authority area.
A lot of people would say what.
Roads are common for starters.
But roads, sure. I mean, every week I have people on to me about potholes on roads.
And can you imagine how bad they'd be if there was no property tax? The point is, if you don't know what the tax is spent on, that is not the council's fault. That is all publicly available information.
You have councillors in Roscommon County Council
who will tell you this.
No,
but if you don't have the answers, that's not the council's fault.
What are they spending it on? For public services in rural areas that are non-existent. We pay huge amounts of money for bin collection. In the north, you pay your rates, your bin collection is included. You cannot compare the two systems. They are totally different. If you go to the doctor here tomorrow, you pay €60. If you go in the north,
Claire, that is a difference. We're talking about local services and paying a property tax for the provision of those services. And you're very clear that you have a principled position against a tax on a family home. And yet, You Sinn Féin in local authorities and in Stormont in Northern Ireland are cool about attacks on the family home.
And again, that is Stormont. And wouldn't it be great if we actually had economic independence in the north of Ireland and could actually arrange?
Well, hang on a second. A second ago, you were defending the way the tax situation in relation to property tax was.
The only part I'm defending is the fact that you pay rates in the north of Ireland and you get services for them. You get your bins, you get your school.
So it's okay to have a tax on a family home in those circumstances?
If you know what you're getting and you're actually getting public services, the rate rates in the north aren't property taxes, they're local rates for public services. Here it's a property
charged
tax for the family home.
They're calculating the value of your home, Claire, exactly the same way the property
tax. Okay, let me bring Michael Healy-Ray, who joined us a little late, straight, hot-footed from the Dáil. Where are you on property tax, Michael Healy-Ray?
For being a little bit late, but we had a couple of very important votes that I couldn't
We appreciate
leave.
Your arrival yes, at any time.
Well, I'm very sorry. First of all, the property tax. When I hear people talk about the value of their home. To me, of course, your home is an extremely valuable thing because it's the place that you put down your head every night. It's where you'll give your last days, maybe inside your own home. But when I hear people talk about the value of your home, it's like people saying, oh, a family farm is worth so much. It's actually, technically speaking, it's worth nothing because you're not selling it. So it's not a saleable asset. And when I hear people saying, well, property, the house they might be living in has gone up in value. If you're not selling it, it's not gone up in value. Now, I'm not a person who tries to go around saying, well, everything should be for nothing. I'm not one of those people. Like, money doesn't fall out of the sky. Taxes have to be paid. I appreciate that. But it's about being fair. It's about being equitable. And The one statement that was made here tonight that I couldn't agree with more, that I've heard thousands of times about property tax, is people say, what are we getting for it? Like when people we'll take, for instance, in rural areas, they don't have a footpath, they don't have a street light, they don't have a bus, they mightn't have school kids being
collected. Well, now you would have a very good insight into how money is spent on Kerry County Council.
Of course I do, but this is why I prefaced what I was saying by saying I'm not a person who says that we shouldn't pay anything.
I'm just trying to figure out what it is you're saying.
Well, what I'm saying very clearly is that a very commonly asked question is, we don't see that we're getting anything for our property tax. Now, the reason why the property tax, of course, is such a big thing right now is because it has been ignored with a number of years that the government stayed away from it. So there was no revision. Properties that were bought weren't brought into the net. So now it's happening all of a sudden. So the one thing that I would be asking government to do, and remember now it's only today and yesterday that the details are coming to light at all, is that whatever will happen, that it would be fair and that it would be affordable to people. And that people's own...
But do we now know what's happening? So yes. Do you think it is fair and affordable?
Well, let me put it to you this way. I and the people that work in my office, we're getting an awful lot of queries for people saying that they're not happy with it because of the fact that if they see that it's being increased on them, they're saying that it's a tax at a time when they really can't afford the tax. Because the one thing that we have to talk about in the context of the property tax is what else is happening. Look at all the other range of taxes.
I still don't know the answer to the question of do you think it's fair or affordable?
But Katie, if you'll let me finish, what people are saying is, at a time when the government is bringing in a new raft of charges in the climate bill, and when they're disguising more taxation on hard-working people through the guise of the climate action bill, and what that's going to mean to people. People are terrified of the taxes they're going to have to pay. If you look at the increase in ESB, which I would imagine probably 60% in the last 6 or 7 years, ESB charges. So families are struggling. And that's why when government are imposing new charges with regard to the property tax and increasing it in many cases, we have to be very mindful that we don't drive people into very impoverished poverty because of the fact that they're struggling so much to pay their bills coming out of this pandemic.
For the fourth time, Michael Healy-Ray, are you in favour of the property tax regime as laid out by the government today?
I would imagine that if we listen to what I just said, the answer would be no.
No. Okay, great. Grainne.
Yeah, there's a couple of things on the local property tax. I think the timing of it is very interesting. Just after the government announced this ace up their sleeve of the economic recovery fund, they announced that they're going to do this thing that there's been a lot of talk about for years now, that the local property tax will be changed, tweaked, increased, whatever you have yourself, or whatever you want to call it yourself. I think that's interesting how hard they've tried to impress upon the public and citizens that it's not going to cost the vast majority of people anything more, which is kind of, if you're going to do it, you know, do it properly is kind of my thinking about the policy. If this is your policy, then implement it. I think the fact that the part of the problem with implementing it is because the property market is skewed. Prices, their house prices aren't really reflective of the value we're getting because there's a shortage of supply. So there is a problem with taxing someone who is in a high value property a lot of money because they may have bought it at a time when house prices were more reasonable and now they don't have any cash. All they have, they might be asset rich, rich cash poor, and they can't afford to pay that. That's actually a huge problem. It's kind of a blunt force instrument. Which is part of the problem. If you want to pay for these services, you kind of have to do it in a more targeted way, even though everybody has to pay something. And then finally, I suppose the main point is if they're going to do this and tweak it again in a couple more years, they're going to have, they may pay for it because particularly older voters, Fine Gael voters, they're going to be very worried about paying huge amount of tax on a property that they bought a couple of years ago that has skyrocketed because of the way that the government has handled the housing crisis. Yeah. And that isn't worth actually what it's being valued as today because the market is skewed.
Yeah, and I'm getting a lot of reaction. I'll bring you in on this one, Barry, as well. Hi, Kate. If we're going to pay property tax, it should be based on income and be equitable. I own my own house but live on a part-time wage on which the property tax is a huge challenge. That's from Monica. I live in Leitrim, pay my property tax and get nothing. The road outside my house is a mess. Surely motor tax pays for that road, says Natalie. We have an email saying, doesn't PAYE pay for the provision of services? No comparison between North and South when the North has free healthcare, education and even bins collected. That's your point, Claire. Tell your Fine Gael clown, we won't stand over that sort of... say that we pay LPT in Donegal, we pay for bins separately, our roads are a disgrace, libraries and other services have been shut for over a year, our money is being wasted.
Well, I don't agree with that. I mean, the fact that there are libraries there, they still have to be paid for, even if they haven't been closed because of a lack of funding, they've been closed because of COVID. What Gwani was saying about this is, if you're going to do it right. In actual fact, the amount of money that will be collected from LPT will now go up as a result of this, notwithstanding the fact that most people will experience a decrease. That is because the net is being widened. We already have a tax that is assessed on the basis of people's income. It's called income tax. It funds the vast majority of activity in this state already. The idea behind LPT was that you would put in place something that reflected where somebody lived and the services that are available to them. That is why that person in Donegal pays a great deal less in local property tax than one of the people I represent in Blackrock pays, because their houses are more valued. They do also have more services, that's true.
But in many cases, can I just put this to you, because it does come up again and again. In many cases, people are living in homes where they might own 10% of or 20% of the equity in it. Mm-hmm. And actually what they have is a massive debt. And then they're asked to pay a tax. Indeed, many people listening will be very familiar with this. So they have this debt that they're already servicing from their post-tax income, and they're asked to pay more tax on that from income that they have already paid tax on. It does seem to be an extraordinary... Could it not be tweaked in a way that it could be based on the amount of equity you actually have in the home you're living in?
Yes, it could. And I'm not for a second suggesting the LPT system is perfect. There are lots of things I would change, and I think there are missed opportunities in what the government is doing now. But I have two major problems with what has come out in this debate. First is that you're not getting services from your local authority. And people can give out about the condition of roads, and that's fine. It's a legitimate complaint in lots of parts of the country. But local authorities provide a whole range of services across housing, roads, parks, as I said, and all of those things.
The other thing is that
there are lots of things built into the LPT to protect people. And I would hate for people to get the impression that this is a huge tax. The reality is that the average tax is, I don't have the exact figure, but it's in the region of €300 per annum.
The extent of that is very much in the eye of the...
Of course it is. And there are people who will struggle with that figure. But even then, when it isn't paid, it's not the case that somebody actually has to confront the non-payment of it the way you would if you didn't pay your mortgage, for example. There are systems in place to account for that, and there are low interest rates in terms of things. It's a debt that would accrue on the property at a very small rate. Okay, so I wouldn't want that to be blown out of proportion either.
This issue that everything that's going to be paid into a local authority is now going to be ring-fenced for that local authority, I'm sure you'd be delighted, in Dunleary, Rathdown. Not so great for Roscommon.
No, absolutely not. But I think whatever way the funding is spent, we've had a long-standing position. It's well known in relation to the property tax. We do not believe in taxing the family home. And as has been said, a lot of homeowners have a mortgage. They pay the highest mortgage rates in the entire of Europe. And now on top of that, they're paying property tax. And it might for some people only be €90. But what's come out today is that people in a property worth over €1 million will see their local property tax reduced.
No,
and people with less than that. Well, that's what
there
Leo Varadkar told.
Well, so you weren't at that meeting. As it happens, I was.
Well,
what he was doing was he was reacting to the dishonest claims from Sinn Féin to the effect that everybody's going to be paying so much more property tax. And he was addressing instances where people will in fact be paying less. 60% of people will be paying less. And it is not true, by the way, Claire, to suggest, for example, that in terms of the way the property tax is collected. First of all, it's not a tax on
a
family
home. But the Taoiseach did specifically set out cases. And
he gave examples.
He gave an example of a home that may have cost 1.3 million.
Which is moving from one bandit to the next.
To 1.6.
And of course, he chose examples to demonstrate that most people are falling into a category where they're reducing. But there are other people who won't. And it's absolutely not true to start at the starting point. And it was a reaction to something that was said by Sinn Féin. It is not true to start from the point that everybody's going to see increased taxes. They aren't.
No, they're not. And only about 33% of households are going to see an increase. I know that and I acknowledge that. But it's an increase that an awful lot of people simply cannot afford. They are coming out of the most difficult time in their lives. They've lost jobs. Some of them have lost everything. Bills are increasing. The cost of living is increasing. Rents are increasing. Mm-hmm. And now we have this
but
coming
of
down
those
the tracks.
33% of people who see an increase, the vast majority will see an increase of 90 euro.
Okay.
It's a lot of money for some people.
It is for some people. But that's why I said there are already structures in place to mitigate that and to help people address it where they need to.
I want to move on and talk about the other issue that's in the political ether today, and that's about renters, tenants, and what they may be facing into with the lifting of the ban on evictions and rent freeze. Have a quick listen to what Paul Murphy of People for Profit said in the Dáil earlier today.
Taoiseach is clearly very touchy on the subject of his government's lack of care for renters. And the reason for that is we have a government of landlords for the landlords. I give some facts rather than assertions. The cost of renting has more than doubled in the last 10 years. Dublin has the fifth highest rents in all of Europe, more expensive than Paris, Berlin or Rome. Irish renters pay an average of 40% of their income in rent, the highest in the world.
There are some statistics. Actually, I'll go to Grainne in EA first, because Grainne, you are renting.
I am, yeah. I think that point about 40% of income being spent on rent is a good one. I would love to hear political parties say what proportion of people's rent or income should be spent on rent, because that's actually crucial to the debate that we're having at the moment. The idea that rent freezes are unconstitutional, which is what Taoiseach said in the Dáil today, you can't just decide that something is unconstitutional. It has to be tested by the courts. So that seems like a political sidestepping of the issue, because it is politically contentious. And I understand there is a free market here where you can set prices at whatever level. But if it completely skewed out of proportion to people's incomes, which is the problem, that seems to be ignored whenever that issue was brought up. And then obviously the constant increases in rent. The rent cap, rather than capping that, has now set a target for landlords to hit every time a year passes, that when they're looking at whether to increase rent, they have a figure laid out in front of them that they can charge. And that is not working, basically. It is completely unstable. I don't see a plan. There's all this talk about, you know, first-time buyers and a strategy for home ownership. What's the strategy for renting? Because it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Okay, Michael Healy-Ray, you know what I'm going to say to you.
I'm not able to read your mind.
Well, you are a very substantial landlord. You have a lot of properties for rent.
I absolutely, yes.
Do you approach it, as Grainne, you were saying, the 4% increase on review as a target, or...?
No, absolutely not as a target, because when you're renting properties, it works both ways. What you're trying to do is you're trying to balance a book. You're trying to make sure that, first of all, you can meet your costs, which are your mortgages, the insurance, the property tax, all the maintenance. There's a lot of different issues. And of course, then there's the elephant in the room, in that 52% of whatever any person brings in goes out on tax. So, but there's always going to be a room and a need and a requirement for private rented property in the Irish housing market. But where we are failing completely is in the provision of public housing. In other words, our local authorities are not being funded to the degree that we need to tackle the amount of people that are on a housing list. Because during a person's life, when they're starting out, when they're young, it might be okay or be acceptable that, and they might want to rent because they mightn't want to lock themselves down in any one place. But after a number of years, if people want to get a home of their own, that they won't be, and that they could have the opportunity of buying. That is why we have local authorities with, for instance,
okay,
in our
county. Can I just say to you, because Grainne was making the point there that there are strategies and there's a huge amount of discussion about how to get people onto the property, into property ownership, and to do that. But we want to talk now about people who are renting, and most people are renting because, as we say, they don't have a lot of choice in the matter in many cases.
But can I just finish the point? Can I finish the point?
Yeah, go on.
About local authorities. If a family can get a local authority house and rent it for a number of years and then be able to purchase that house, that secures them forever. And it's their housing needs sorted for the rest of their lives. And they can rear their families in a house that's affordable to them. And we're quite simply not doing enough of that. And that's where we're failing. That's where we're failing as a government
past
governments. And our local authorities, then we just have an ever-increasing list of people.
But don't you have an ever-decreasing stock of social housing if you're selling on your social houses?
No, not necessarily. If it worked in the past where council houses were built and the tenants were allowed to purchase them. We also had another thing, Katie, in the county that I represent, a thing called a single rural cottage. That was where a family had a site available from a family farm, or they were able to get it from an auntie or an uncle. And the local authority built a house for that family on that land. It was transferred to them, and then in time they were able to buy it back, and the house that was built upon it. And it secured that family forever. And when you talk about taking away the housing stock, if you're taking care of a family, and thankfully I've seen this happen over and over again, that if the mother and father were getting older, and if there was a son or a daughter who was going to take over that house, they were able to become a co-tenant on it, and it became their house in the future.
If there's a cap, the next generation.
The government
has put a cap on rent increases. Do you think there should be a cap put on the amount that a tenant spends of their income? What proportion of their income should be spent on rent as well?
Grainne, when I heard the figure there of 40% as well, people have so many other bills calling upon them for basic to live, just to get to work, to come from work, the day-to-day living costs. A person can't be paying what I would call exorbitant rents because it's not sustainable.
What's fair, though?
Yes, but you see, at the same time, then you have to come back to where the problem starts. The problem starts is if the property is too expensive to start with. And if you take the person then who has bought that property, and if they're trying to rent that out, they're looking at their bottom line and they're trying to balance the book.
Yeah, okay.
And the person that's renting it then might find themselves in a property.
But why are they the one burdened with the cost of that, though? That doesn't seem fair, particularly when those people are trying to... the point that you made, that they eventually want to own a home. If you're charging them more rent, they have less money to save to buy that home. So that's another issue as well.
But you're 100% right. But that's why when I look at the rents that are in places like Dublin, and the rents are reflected in the first instance in the cost of the houses. And I truthfully don't believe that houses or property are worth the money that you see being paid for them in places like Dublin, because it's unsustainable and it's not real. When you hear people talking about an ordinary house here in Dublin costing, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of euros, that's not real. It's not sustainable. It's not right. Now,
can I just ask you, in relation to the policy suggestions that are being floated around in relation to where we are with this, people now facing possibly an 8% increase because the rent freeze is going.
Yes.
Labour are calling today for a 3-year rent freeze from now. Would you support that?
Anything that's proposed has to be sustainable for everybody. The one thing that you can't do, because that would cause chaos in the market as well, if you distort it, and I know that I've seen over the last number of years an awful lot of people who were in the rental of properties actually giving up and selling their properties, and it took properties that were rented out of the market because they were bought by owners who were going to keep them and not rent them out again, and it shortened the supply. If you shorten the supply...
But you see, I'm asking you this particularly because you are in this position. Yes, you know this market inside out. You have, I think, 16 properties being rented right now.
I have the experience.
What do people in your position think when they hear rent freeze for 3 years?
I'll word it to a different way. Because I've no problem in talking about myself or anybody else for that matter. I am doing this since I was 19. So I would think that I have a fair good idea of what happens and what's real and what's not real. I do it in County Kerry. I know the market there. I know what's sustainable. I know what's not sustainable.
Have you been
when
a renter, Michael?
When I see the prints that are being charged in places like Dublin, that is not real money to me. I can't understand how people could be expected to pay those rents. And that is where we have to tackle the problem.
But are landlords like you going to be looking at this? Because they obviously had to forego a rent increase in the last review. Do you think, are you going to be considering rent increases next month when you're allowed to go at it again?
Absolutely not.
No, only, not in this circumstance.
No, absolutely not.
To all your tenants can be rest absolutely easy now that they want.
To it. The only way that things will change, if leases come up at a certain time, which in my case aren't right now, but when they would be looked at by a local authority. But when I hear people, individuals being faced with the type of increases that I've heard over the last number of days, that is unsustainable. And people can only afford so much. But you have to be balanced in this debate. And one thing that I don't like is when I see TDs standing up inside the Dáil and talking about people who own property and rent it out as if there's something wrong with them and as if they're doing something illegal and if it's not a proper thing to be doing. It's the same as...
But you see, there is a sense that there is an extraordinary concentration of landlords in the Dáil compared to the concentration of landlords in the general population. So it is inevitable that particular policies will be looked at through the perspective of the person renting out the property rather than the perspective of the person at the other side of that equation.
But you couldn't make a more wrong statement, and I'll tell you why. You could say the exact same thing so about farmers. You could say the same thing about publicans. Take, for instance, the farming. If you looked at the members of the Houses of the Oireachtas and how many of them either have a farm, are part-time farmers or came from farms, and are you trying to say then that they wouldn't be able to, be for the best interest of the farmers and balanced in what they're trying to do, whether that's representing...
No, but that's exactly my point, how many people in the Dáil are renters?
Yes.
So how many people in the Dáil are currently tenants and struggling to pay 40% of their income going to pay to keep a roof over their heads? And if that were the case, there may be different policies in place in relation to this cohort of people.
I wouldn't agree with you, because if you understand an affair, whether it's farming, whether it's renting, whatever it is, if it's any type of business, if you understand it, the one thing that an awful lot of people in government have, they have one big thing in common. They never paid a man or a woman on a Friday evening. They never employed anybody. And then they find it very hard to understand business. Like, in my opinion, in government...
Well, you're just making my point for me. Yes, that if you've never been in a position,
yes, but you
don't
see,
fully understand or appreciate the difficulties.
But you can see it from both sides. I'm representing people, be it in a local authority or in the Dáil, for a long time. So I would like to think that I have an understanding of the needs of people. And with regard to renting properties, I have an excellent knowledge of it. The same knowledge that I would have of farming and many other aspects of the problems that we're dealing with every day.
Okay.
And just because you're involved in something doesn't mean to say that you can't see it from both sides and be a good person to represent people about that issue.
Okay. Barry Ward, a lot of people really, really worried out there that this is coming down the tracks. People may be out of work or having been on the PUP and maybe now facing into a massive, up to €140, if you look at the kind of rents that people are paying, if they get 8% on top of those rents, €140 extra a month.
One thing Michael said that I do agree with is that is totally unsustainable. And this all comes back to the problem with supply and housing. That's something that is being addressed.
So why isn't the government stepping in to protect these people?
Well, they have stepped in to protect these people, but there is always a balancing act. And I don't think it's fair, for example, for Cornu to say that the only way you can declare that something is unconstitutional is by testing it in the courts. That's not a reasonable way for the government to behave. They go to the Attorney General's office. You have a fleet of very highly qualified lawyers there who render advice to the government. which says that this is unconstitutional and can't be done because in the Constitution there is a balancing of rights between, in the terms of the ownership of land. So if you take landlords, for example, obviously it has become a bit of a bad word, and many landlords we talk about are institutional landlords.
Let me finish this point
because you put them to one side for a second. You have lots of people who never intended to be landlords, people who bought an apartment maybe and then had a bigger family and had to move away, and they still have that apartment, which, as you said earlier, might still be a negative equity. They have a mortgage to service. They have debts to service. They can't afford, for example, to freeze rents because maybe mortgage interest rates will change. Now, hopefully that won't change for a long time. But they're the people whose rights are also in the balance, along with tenants. Nobody should be facing the kind of rent increases that you're talking about, particularly in the current climate where interest rates are low. There's no justification for it, I agree. But the Constitution
Our hands are tied, that's what you're saying.
At the moment, the Constitution necessarily balances the rights of all of the parties to that, not just the tenants. And that's why I don't think a rent freeze is constitutional.
That is not a universally held opinion among constitutional lawyers.
And that's fine, but that's the Attorney General's advice, as I understand it.
And given that it's not a universally held one, would it not be better to test and see what the Supreme Court thinks about that?
I have no problem with that, but you cannot make policy on the basis of going to the Supreme Court to seek the approval of the Supreme Court
And the same way you can't rule it out absolutely because it's unconstitutional. Yeah. You can say there are legal issues with it, but you can't say it's unconstitutional.
But the advice of the Attorney General is that it is unconstitutional, and that has to be the starting
point.
That
doesn't make it so.
I'm
not saying it makes it so, Grainne, but you can't say that the only way to establish whether something is unconstitutional is to test it in the courts. If that were the case, I mean, for starters, there are things that everybody agrees are unconstitutional, but then you cannot, as a government, make policy where every step you take, you go to the Supreme Court for approval. That's not a functional government. That's government
by the judiciary. But when there are contested issues of huge, huge national importance, why not do it and sort it out once and for all and stop the debate around it.
Because what's being suggested is we put in place this policy and you implement it and then you wait for somebody to test it in the court, somebody who has to do so at their own expense and their own risk, test it. They may or may not win. If they do win and it's deemed to be unconstitutional, then the government has got to row back on the policies put in place. If they don't win, then there's an individual who's out of pocket and happy, you know,
that's
great. That is the court's warning, but it's not a reasonable way to make policy. It's a reasonable way to make law. But if you're asking the government to operate on the basis that every time they make a decision, they've got to go to the Supreme Court.
But that's not what I'm saying.
Governments have gone ahead and without Attorney General approval for various policy measures over the years.
I'm not saying the Attorney General has to approve measures, but where the Attorney General has said there is a major constitutional issue in this policy, the government is absolutely right to be questioned whether it should be implemented or not. They don't have to listen to the Attorney General.
They can say there is a constitutional issue. They cannot say it is unconstitutional.
You're just playing with words there because they are the same issue from the point of view of implementing a policy. If it's unconstitutional or there's a constitutional issue, the government shouldn't be doing it because it's against the Constitution.
Okay. I'm just going to let you very quickly get in because I need to go.
I'd just love to know, Barry said that the government are stepping in to protect renters. They have done nothing for renters. And it's not just renters in the rent pressure zones. It's renters outside of it who are just as, if not more, vulnerable. And then on top of that is the issue of security. There is no security in renting. Rent increases are out of control, and that ban on increases should have come in a long time ago. And the bottom line is the government have taken no action for the renters in this state, none whatsoever.
There's no way I have enough time to implement. For starters, you're right. I mean, renting is not ideal and there are loads of problems, but there are loads of measures put in place. The Residential Tenancies Board has whole tribunals where renters get to take landlords to court. You've got all the rent pressure zones you mentioned. There are loads of legislative provisions put in place.
Do you believe today that renters out there feel secure?
No. I don't, and I've been there. I've been there myself, Katie. And of course, we have much more to do. But to say that there are no protections, that is scaremongering.
There's been nothing done on the rent increases, is what I said, Barry.
What you said was there was no protection for renters. That's wrong, Claire, and it's scaremongering.
Okay. We're going to take a break there.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, like Jones's Road on the day of an All-Ireland, Michael Healy Ray and myself will know that scene very, very well. That is how the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Hoolan, defended remarks he made at the weekend when he described socialising Dublin City Centre as shocking scenes. He said he was not making a moral judgment on those gathered on South William Street, but commenting from a public health point of view. Meanwhile, we're told the Taoiseach tonight told his parliamentary party that city and county councils should be providing facilities and facilitating outdoor gatherings rather than closing off public areas, while Dublin Lord Mayor Hazel Chew has said there should be
no railing off of public spaces, this in response to the move by the OPW to fence off the bandstand in St. Stephen's Green in Dublin. I just want to play you Mark McSharry, Fianna Fáil's Mark McSharry, who had a thing or two to say about this issue in the Dáil earlier.
And this is replicated all over the country, Spanish Arch, where I live in Strand Hill. There's so many bollards on the seafront. I'd say, had the Nazis done it in France on D-Day, God knows what the outcome of the war would have been.
Oh yeah, Goodwin's Law kicks in yet again. But it is, I think, a huge issue for people, and people are very, very exercised about this. I think those images, I think, have you seen them, Michael Healy-Ray, of the bandstand and Stephen's Green being fenced off?
I spoke about this just before coming out here to your radio programme, Inside in the Dáil. And what I said was, the government have to make up their minds. They said this was going to be the summer of outdoors. Outdoor eating, outdoor drinking, outdoor everything. So what did the people do? They went outdoors. And what are the government now saying? Well, because we've seen it by their actions, there's more barriers, and I mean every barrier that's for rent around the country is gone. The shops don't have them anymore because they're all bought up, because it's nothing but taping off, barricading. It is like a war zone at the moment. And what are they going to do? Corral the people into other places? You're after telling the people on one hand, go out into the open. And then when they go out into the open, the government aren't happy either. Like, it's definitely a case of too far east is west. And the government have to make up their minds. Are we going to open up everything? And when I say everything, I mean every public house, every restaurant, every place immediately to spread out the people. Or are we? What are we actually telling people? Because what they've done now so far is cause confusion. Because telling people to go outside and then barricading them when they go outside, for God's sake, and I said it inside, would they wake up a small bit and decide what they want to do? And then people come along and put out tweets like this at the weekend. That's not actually helpful either. And I'm not, I don't like
Dr. Tony Hoolan's tweet.
Yes, but I'll put it to this way. I don't ever like speaking or talking about anybody when they're not here for themselves. If they were, I'd say different things, but I will not allow myself to talk about what people say when they're not here to talk for themselves, because that's not proper behaviour. But I'll put it to you this way. Nobody should be coming out and saying something against people when they're doing what they were actually told to do. And that is go into the outdoors and do whatever you're doing outdoors, because this is going to be the summer of outdoor activity.
Just to be clear, because that person is not here to yes. defend their remarks, but they did defend them earlier on, and they made the point that it's not, we told people that it is less risky to be outdoors, but there are certain outdoor situations that are still carry some risk, which is being huddled together very closely. And that's what Tony Hoolan, Dr. Tony Hoolan, was making his points earlier. But there is no doubt, Barry Ward, this is becoming a very serious political issue as we head into this long weekend coming up. And this sense that we're like 15 months into it, it's extraordinary that we are completely at sea, apparently, about what to do with people socialising together outdoors.
I don't think we're completely at sea, and I don't believe there's any confusion. The message is spend your summer outdoors, but the message is also that when you're outdoors, you still have to exercise certain restraints in terms of social distancing, wearing masks if necessary, or whatever it might be. That those restraints are still there, because we're not out of the woods. And although we're progressing towards that, and happily the vaccine programme has gone very well, and lots of people have received their first dose, and we expect that to accelerate even further. I was out of the weekend in my own area, and I have to say, I wasn't in Dublin City Centre, but I saw a lot of very responsible behaviour. I didn't see any problems. I didn't see the kind of things that have been complained of. I saw people, at one point I was in Blackrock Park, and there was a group of about 10 adults sitting in chairs they brought with them in a circle, having fun, chats the way we used to, as it were. And that's not a problem. There's no difficulty with that. I think what Tony Hoolan is complaining about is the notion that people are not observing those restrictions, not observing those cautions that we're asking people to do, which is to keep their distance and to make sure that they don't infect each other, because that's at the heart of all of this. Hopefully we're getting to a stage where people can forget those things.
The idea that it wasn't to be anticipated that people were going to gather in very large numbers in the places they have been gathering is surely crazy. I mean, wasn't there facilities put in place? And this idea that if you build it, they will come. This was let slip. I thought it sounded like this week that Dublin City Council were actually refraining from putting in place the sort of facilities that large groups of people might require in case large groups of people turned up requiring them.
I don't think it's that it wasn't anticipated. I think that people I understand why people might have let their hair down a little bit, and I don't criticise any of them for it. But as I say, there were hordes of people out in Dochy and Killiney, for example, at the weekend. They were still observing social distances. They were not causing a problem. So I think it's entirely foreseeable that people can gather without that being problematic. But I will say this. I do think it's ridiculous in the month where we have the longest days of the year that parks are still closing at 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the evening. They should be open until at least the sun sets. And people should be entitled to enjoy those public spaces.
Should they be entitled to sit on a Victorian bandstand?
As long as they're not doing any damage, I think they should, yeah. And I think if that's a problem, then Dublin City Council needs to put in place measures.
Yeah, that was an OPW move, actually, fencing off that bandstand.
Whoever's responsible for it, they should have somebody there to maintain it if that's the issue.
Claire Curran.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we create spaces for young people in particular now that we're hopefully emerging out of COVID. And, you know, for a lot of young people meeting up together for a drink or whatever last weekend and in the few weekends, I mean, let's be honest, I mean, as regards outdoor activity with our weather, there won't be too many of them. But I think that's really important. And I think it was said repeatedly, this would be an outdoor summer. So we need to prepare for that. And I think it was obvious that, you know, steps should have been taken as regards additional bins, public toilets, a Garda presence, just feet on the beat or whatever you want to call it. But I think this was entirely predictable, and I think we need to ensure now that we do create those spaces for young people in particular. They've suffered hugely in the last year, their mental health and everything else, and I think they should be able to meet up with their friends safely and do that in a safe space.
Yeah, Grainne.
I think the government is in a tricky position at the moment because they're in a space where they can open up because enough people are vaccinated and cases are low enough. And then it's before the pubs and restaurants open up. And I think that what happened in Dublin city centre in particular, but also in other cities around the country, is that we saw how little there is in the city to do for people who want to spend time in the city that isn't in shops or pubs or restaurants, public spaces outdoors that Irish people love to do. And what happened, the scenes that Tony Holohan saw happened as a result of Stephen's Green closing. So all the crowds there migrated to another part of the city that had been recently pedestrianised. So it was kind of a perfect storm that allowed this to happen. But I do think, you know, what Barry was saying there, that there are people around able to socialise safely outdoors. That same day that there was that crowd on South William Street, I was along the canal and there was three families with toddlers to my right and a couple who clearly didn't live together enjoying each other's company to the left. And it was nice atmosphere. It was lovely, really. But there's still not a designated space to do that. So there needs to be kind of a patience with people along the canal, a little bit of bending the rules, but not breaking them while we get through this kind of difficult in between period.
OK, again, talking about rules, I'll just give you a sense, again, a lot of reaction to this one. Yet again, when the government said go outdoors, they were only thinking about one set of people, those who have enough space in their gardens for a barbecue and a pergola. Wouldn't mind a pergola myself. Not a single solitary thought for those living with their parents, those living in apartments, which are not homes, of course, so their inhabitants don't count, and those without the facilities to entertain outside. Another texter says, I was in Killarney National Park last Sunday, not a barrier in sight. Another one, outdoor huge binge parties all over the country. What are we doing? We will not get decent behaviour. Typical Irish attitude, drink in pubs first. Consequences later. Michael.
On a light note, statement of the night has to go to Grainne. I'm just thinking about what she said. A couple who were out, who clearly don't live together, enjoying their company.
I know it's late radio, Michael.
I'm just thinking, Grainne, you're a classic.
She's a classy lady, it's Grainne.
An absolute classic statement. That was the best I heard in a long time.
Council of Civil Liberties, talking, Grainne was mentioning the rules there, but the Council for Civil Liberties are saying, or will say tomorrow, that they are not supporting the emergency legislation before the Oireachtas for renewal this week, unless it is substantially amended and has a final sunset clause put in. It's also talking about rights for pandemic safe protest and worship to be explicitly protected and data to be published on the impact of restrictions on groups such as older people, women, people seeking international protection, LGBTI community. Michael, what's your view on that emergency legislation?
Well, first of all, we had a vote tonight on the Health and Criminal Justice Bill. We had amendments which were voted on as well, some of them there just before we left. And I voted against what I would call giving the government a blank cheque. I can't get over government supporting TDs who in their constituencies are saying one thing on their own local radios and their own local newspapers. And then tonight, when they had an opportunity to vote with the people who have been contacting them in their droves over the last number of weeks and who have been saying, voicing their concerns. And when we had a vote on it then tonight, they all loyally brought in behind the government and voted against what the people have been telling them. So I find it very hard to follow sometimes the blindness and the willing to just put down the head and follow the leader when it comes to government supporting TDs. Because I'd rather if when they're in their constituencies, if they told the people the truth and said, well, we're going to Dublin, we're not going to represent you, we're not going to do what you're asking us to do, we're going to just blindly vote with the government because they're telling us to do it. It was a fine, decent thing tonight to see Sinn Féin and others voting against what was being proposed and not agreeing to giving the government a blank cheque, which they wanted for many more months to come.
Claire?
Yeah, well, as Michael has said, we didn't support the government tonight in relation to the extension of powers. I was actually taken aback at the level of communication I had from constituents, and I know TDs had it right across the board in relation to these powers. I think just people are just so fed up, and I think we're in a position now where we should be able to review this, whether it's on a monthly basis or whatever, rather than giving big chunks of the next 3-4 months on the extension of powers. So we oppose that in the Dáil tonight.
And the vote was 73 to 68. So we gave them a good run for their money, but like it was close, but not close enough.
Barry Ward.
Well, I'm not
people
sure.
are worried about this one.
Yeah, of course they are. And I actually agree with some of what the Irish Council for Liberties has said, particularly in relation to worship and protest. I think there has to be provision for that. However, I'm not sure what Michael or Sinn Féin are proposing in the alternative. Are they saying that the government should have these powers removed entirely? Should there not be the provision for the government to put in place restrictions or safeguards if needed? It's important to remember that
I think the issue is the lack of scrutiny on very draconian legislation and the fact that it's being put in place until November when we're being told that the pandemic unemployment payment will start be tapered off in September.
Until November. What's being put in place until November is the power for the minister to make regulations that are restricted.
But which doesn't require parliamentary oversight.
That's right, but it does. It can be lifted at any stage between now and the 9th of November. So the minister has the power to make those regulations. So you're quite right, and I'm not happy about that, and I spoke against it in the Shannon as well. But at the end of the day, however unhappy I am about it, I recognise that it's a necessary measure, and however much I don't like it, it doesn't mean that it isn't the right thing to do and that the government shouldn't have the power to put in place restrictions where necessary.
It's not a necessary measure. It was
well,
not.
We can agree and to disagree on that, Michael.
Well, I'm sorry, we'll have to disagree, but the public were totally against it. And when I see the vote,
the
68 to 73, that'll tell you it was a reflection.
But sure, these are the same people you're saying aren't representing the public. So the public, I've had lots of people in contact with me who support the continuation of certain restrictions because they're afraid if those restrictions go, that they will be put in danger in public. And that's
you're
the reality.
You're living in a different world to the one I'm living in.
So much.
There's never
Michael,
going
so
to be an absolute majority in favour of any COVID restrictions. What you have to do is just try and strike a sweet spot where there is a balance or an equity about what you were doing. I think Claire's point about a review every month about where we are with the restrictions is a good in-between point between the two sides.
Okay, I just cut across you there, Grainne, just because I want to get very, very quick. I've only a couple of minutes left, but I think a lot of people were very surprised today to see Professor Mary Daly, one of the three members of the Commission on Mother and Baby Homes, taking part on that online event organised by Oxford University, having, as we all know, and there was huge controversy when members of the Commission refused to go before an Oireachtas committee. And some of the issues that emerged from that today, saying that they had to discount evidence given to the confidential committee because they needed to be ultra careful and they were facing big legal pushback. Just very quickly, with your legal hat on, Barry Ward.
Yeah, I don't know because I don't know exactly what was said and I didn't see that. It's obviously it's an issue that's caused huge hurt and an obvious controversy. And I mean, I can't comment on it because I don't know exactly what was said or what she said when she was at that symposium. So
okay, well, I think Grainne, were you across that today?
Yeah, well, my colleague was Orla Ryan, who does extensive reporting on this, and she was at the speech the online event to listen. And it seems quite extraordinary that Professor Daly admitted that evidence given to the commission was essentially discounted due to kind of it being off the record or the legal kind of version of that. And I suppose it calls into question, this was something that survivors said, you know, all along, I don't see what I said represented in the report. And I don't see it in the conclusions. And now there seems to be an admission that, that's what happened.
That was going on. I think we'll have to return to this because I think it will cause more hurt and more concern and more controversy. But unfortunately, I have to take my last break now.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And just very quickly, one headline from tomorrow's Irish Examiner. The ESRI urges the government to borrow 5 billion more a year to tackle the housing crisis. That's going to get a lot of play, I think, tomorrow. That's all we have time for tonight. My thanks to our guests and to you for listening and to my programme team. And I'll hand you over now to Colin Murray on Late Date.